Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Thursday, it's October 24th. Currently, we've got 37 degrees in Heber Park City and 43 degrees in Heber Valley. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Leslie. Good morning, Wasatch back. Yeah, looking at another gorgeous day. We've got a little bit of cloud cover hanging on from a front that's been working its way through northern Utah. It will drop temperatures into the afternoon with highs just around 52 in Park City, 57 in Heber. Sunshine, though, should take over with any lingering moisture clearing out throughout the morning. Overnight lows should be near 33 in Park City. Tomorrow, another sunny day. High pressure builds right back in after this weak trough continues to slide east, and so temperatures rebound, 63 tomorrow and upper 60s on Saturday for highs. Lots of sunshine. We'll start to see increased moisture though Sunday. Temperatures stay near the same. Overnight lows will be in the low to mid 40s with 67 on Sunday. A front working its way in on Monday should see a good pattern change next week. We'll drop us to 55 on Monday. A chance of rain late Monday into Tuesday with rain and snow chances increasing on Tuesday as well as the storm system moves through. Overnight lows will be in the low 30s on Tuesday morning with low 40s for highs, and then even cooler air moving in on Wednesday with a chance of wraparound shower activity will linger as well. Should see some snow showers early Wednesday with temperatures in the mid-20s and highs just in the upper 30s on Wednesday. Should see a break Thursday for Halloween. I know it's past the seven-day forecast, but another system looks to be in the works for next Friday. Could be here late Halloween night, early Friday. We'll keep an eye on timing on that one. Heber mentioned the high of 57 today, 68 tomorrow, so a nice rebound. Comfortable temperatures this weekend with low 70s. We'll see plenty of sunshine. Overnight lows near freezing this weekend with increasing clouds next week. We fall to 61 on Monday. A chance of rain late Monday. Rain and snow showers on Tuesday. Temperatures near 47 for the high. And then a few showers, snow showers early Wednesday with 22 for the overnight low and 46 for the high Wednesday afternoon with clearing skies.
Okay, Nate. Thank you.
You bet.
And on the phone with us with a trails report, we have Laura Anthony with Mountain Trails Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie, and happy Thursday, Park City. Boy, is it beautiful out there. It's cold, but it is so pretty. The air is clear. Great day to get out on the trails. Looks like we've got Mountain Trails, Rick and Dave from Basin Rec are both reporting that trails in all of the jurisdictions are really, really nice. Mia from Wasatch Trails Foundation saying the same. There is a lot of winter prep marking going on in the Round Valley area. Clark Ranch, you'll see it. You'll see some up in Bonanza Flat if you're out there. Probably actually all over the Basin Rec turf as well, where they'll be grooming. We've got a lot of mowing going on. So if you see the equipment out there, just as usual, stay clear. One note, I don't think this is really widely known, but it needs to be. The Bonanza Loop Trail is closed for now. It will be closed until spring. It's closed for wildlife conservation and giving the animals some space as they prepare for winter. So it's a great trail, and we know we just opened it, but you got to stay off for now. It'll be open next July when the snow melts up there.
Okay.
Also, Yeah, and Mia from Wasatch Trails is reporting that there's construction going on the Jordanelle Ridge, so please just be aware and check the Wasatch Trails Foundation website or Instagram for dates and times when the blasting will be happening. She's reporting that the Wild Trail is amazing, so if you haven't been out there, get out, and like I said, it's going to be just gorgeous out there today, so we'll hope to see you out there.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Laura.
Thanks, Leslie. Bye.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the Local News Hour this morning, I'll be talking with Summit County Council member Chris Robbins. We'll recap yesterday's meeting. Arts Council Executive Director Jocelyn Scudders, joined by Community Inclusion Coordinator Andrea Zavala, with details on the last Friday gallery stroll, the free Dia de los Muertos celebration, and Small Business Saturday Market coming up. And finally, the director of the Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District, Dana Jones, in with an update on a trails speed study being done. Well, after a near-fatal car accident in 2018 and a fun dare from her oldest child, Park City resident Jen Drummond has reached her goal of summiting the second tallest peaks on each continent, becoming the first woman and only the second human in the world to complete the climbs. After healing from the accident, she said that should have killed her. She began climbing. She started with Amma Damam in Nepal.
This started because I was climbing a mountain named Ama de Blom, which my son heard as I'm a dumb blonde, and said I should climb a real mountain like Mount Everest. And our family does hard things, so I'm like, I'll show you what hard is. I'll do Everest because we're all capable of summiting our Everest no matter what it is.
To meet the Guinness World Records criteria, she climbed the second highest mountains on each of the seven continents and then went on to climb an additional two mountains for a total of nine to ensure that she had the record.
When Guinness World Records was looking to file this pursuit, they said, you know, some people think Indonesia is a part of Australia instead of Asia, so we really want you to climb that mountain in Indonesia named Sumantri. And if Russia was to break off from Europe, the second highest point would be Mount Rosa in Switzerland, so could you climb that too? So I did that one in May of this year, and then Indonesia just opened, and we just got Sumantri done October 9th.
All of the climbs were difficult, but hard in different ways. She says Mount Logan in Canada stands out for the endurance that was required.
Just because you were not allowed assistance and had to carry all of your gear, and it's a very windy mountain, so you would set up a camp, you'd have to build an igloo to prevent your tent from ripping in the wind, bury your gear so it didn't blow away, and you had to do that five times. So each time you set up a new camp, you had to build a new igloo and protect all of your stuff. It was just a lot of work.
Her last climb, although not technically difficult, took the longest just because of the logistics.
This Indonesia climb was one single day, but it was so hard to get in because of the civil war. And so I flew over there and I was on 16 days of standby. And every morning I'd wake up at 6 a.m. and they'd be like, nope, we're not flying today. Be ready for tomorrow. And I'm in an area of the world that is not safe. So they're moving me hotels. They're moving me hotel rooms. They don't want me to establish a pattern in the area. We finally got the green light to fly in. We flew in. Within 15 minutes, we started climbing the mountain.
After weeks of waiting, the climb itself only took about 10 hours and required hiring three armed guards to keep her and the team safe. With mission accomplished, she said she's still riding high on the thrill of her achievement.
When you cover every possible version of something and you know in your heart of hearts that you've taken it and done it and there's zero questions left, that integrity is a level of confidence and celebration that no one can take away from you, and it is the best feeling in the whole world.
As if that wasn't enough, with four of the seven summits already completed, Drummond says she will finish climbing all of the world's tallest peaks. She has three left. Joining me now on the phone, I have Summit County Council Member Chris Robinson. Good morning.
Hi, Leslie.
So you led the discussion yesterday about the partnership with Dakota Pacific and their proposal on the western side of Kimball Junction. And you mentioned people are conflating the county's project with the developers. So explain what you mean there.
Well, Dakota Pacific owns like 50 acres that they have left and had an entitlement from the tech center. And then the county and High Valley Transit have owned the, I guess, the so-called Richens parcel, you know, that has the Sheldon Richens Public Services Building and the existing transit center on. It's about 6 acres. And so what we are doing with this public-private partnership is coming up with a program for that site that moves transit center off that site, basically onto DPRE land further to the south, and that creates a structured parking on top of which podium there would be some development. And part of that development is the county's, shouldn't count in DPRE's column for development. The county is proposing to build 165 units of affordable housing on top of that podium that is outside of DPRE's project. That's what I meant, that I don't believe that shouldn't count against Dakota Pacific. That's something that we want to do.
So
basically on our land.
Yeah, so are we talking about two separate projects here, or is this, because it's a public-private partnership, now one project?
Well, I guess there's two ways to answer that. You know, the ownership, there would be certain things that would be jointly owned, such as, you know, there'd have to be an entity created that would jointly own and operate and maintain the parking structure and the plaza and any common areas that are shared, because on this podium there would be some retail and commercial that DPRE owns, and then some affordable housing that the county owns. So I still think they're separate projects, but there is overlap in that sense.
Okay, well, I guess that this comes to the Planning Commission how? The county's project separately from what Dakota Pacific is, you know, proposing?
You know, you raise a good point. I'm not exactly sure how the Planning Commission reengages on this.
All right.
So, I mean, it's been, you know, this long storied history with Dakota Pacific's project with the Planning Commission, and now it's at the County Council, and whether it's something goes back, I don't know.
All right. So we've added the Richens parcel to the equation and the county spearheading that. And I guess it doesn't really matter who owns what parcel. We're still talking about the sum total of residences, you know, over 900. So, you know, to say that, it, you know, people are conflating this, the reality is that we still have a project close to what was originally proposed.
Yeah, I think the question that the council has been framing or trying to wrestle with is Dakota believes they need 500 market rate units. Question is, to what degree do we want to build affordable units on that, you know, in the county anywhere, and particularly in this geography? And so they have proposed 250 units, and the county has talked long about, you know, do we do a housing authority? Is the marketplace itself going to build enough affordable units, and we have land, and why wouldn't we want to, you know, incentivize the market or take the bull by the horn, so to speak, and build some units? So that is the question. You know, is it our goal to have as few units as possible there, or do we want more affordable units? That's the question.
All right. So for the county to pay for its development, will you have to issue more bonds?
There would be some debt incurred, whether they be bonds or not. There's the intent is that we would do a 4% low-income housing tax credit project for the estimated 165 units, which would have a debt component in the capital stack. Whether they're bonds or not, I don't know, but it would have a cash flow to amortize it. And the tax credit, the way that works is there's a tax credit investor that basically provides the equity, other than the, you know, there'll be maybe some land contribution, but most of the risk capital is coming from the tax credits. That's how it works. I won't go into more detail because it's probably boring. But
well, I guess that really the bottom line is, will taxpayers countywide have to pay these bonds off, or does the county do one of these PIDs, these public infrastructure district, that ensures that those within the district have to pay for it with additional taxes?
I doubt that it would be a PID. They're generally for infrastructure, not vertical development. The debt from that is needed for the 165 affordable units would be amortized by the revenues from the units, not from the county taxpayers.
All right. There is a public hearing November 7th at New Park Hotel. The plan is to take a vote before the end of the year. We are hearing that's necessary to do before the state legislature meets in January.
I think that's accurate.
All right. Otherwise, have you heard what might be happening if, in fact, you don't take a vote on this?
I think we have a pretty good, you know, past is prologue, as they say, to the kinds of things that can happen. I think there's positive momentum, so we haven't been dwelling on, the downside. But the similar things that we've seen in the past, I think, would return, in maybe in more damaging iterations.
All right. The discussion regarding UDOT's role in this fixing Kimball Junction seemed kind of on the negative side. Are you not confident that all of the options on the table can address the traffic?
I think it's gravitating toward the so-called alternative C, which is to grade separate all the pedestrian crossings so that none of the signals on 224 are waiting for people to cross, pedestrians. And to upgrade additional lanes and especially additional turning movements. And our preferred alternative was to pass through all of the, I'm going to just simplify, the resort bound in and out traffic, just get it through Kimball Junction without having any delays due to cross streets at Ute and Olympic Boulevard. That was the so-called alternative B, and it didn't. It had some problems with it, some technical problems, some geometry problems. It's been eliminated. We think alternative C is the best of the other available options, but it's not super exciting, but we think we need to explore it further. There is an option of maybe combining alternative A with C. Alternative A was to basically create another portal on I-80 west of Kimball Junction in the vicinity of the factory stores, the outlets, and turning Landmark into more of a collector road that would come up through by Walmart and Staples and come into the junction there. It's very tight, and we're not sure that works, but it may be both of them together. It's yet to be determined. UDOT is wrestling with those two options or a combination.
Okay. Well, speaking of traffic.
A and C, in other words.
Yeah. Speaking of traffic, we do have a lot of traffic along I-80 eastbound past the Kimball Junction exit coming into the US 40 intersection, and then more traffic along eastbound US 40 from the I-80 to Park City exit. Don't have any accidents reported at this point. Just sounds like a lot of cars. Anyway, let's move on to the Elk Meadows Assisted Living. We know it's officially closing December 1st. Councilmember Roger Armstrong mentioned some members of the council have met with seniors and considered whether there's room on the Gilmore property that the county owns there near Home Depot for perhaps an assisted living center. Would that work?
Roger and I did meet. Roger Armstrong and I have met recently with some of the leaders of the Park City senior community. And we did actually have a site visit out there. The county owns, I think it's 50 or 70 acres left after the High Valley Transit and Mountain Regional uses on the south end. And there is a spot that we looked at that we think might, they need to do a CCRC continuity. Let's see. I never can get the acronym right, but it's a continuity of care for retirement community. And it would require some 5 to 10 acres. And, we have some nice land out there, and there's a development occurring right at exit 2 on US 40, the so-called marketplace at Silver Creek that Henry Sigg has been working on. And this would be not adjacent, but kind of kitty corner to it. There's a parcel there. It's a lot of details to be worked out. But, we do have land there, and that might be a good use for it.
What was the response from seniors? Did they think so?
Well, yeah, they were the ones that asked if they could meet about it.
Okay. What about putting such a facility for Dakota Pacific, or is there just not enough money to be made on that?
Dakota Pacific has identified 115-room senior facility, I'm going to call it, because I don't fully understand what it would be, but in their project. But the kind of land that this CCRC would require would take about a third of their property. And this is better probably if we can do it at Gilmore.
Yeah. The Klein Dolly request for proposals, the council discussed that RFP that it may issue to do something on that 17 acres that the county has next to the Jeremy Ranch Elementary School. Different council members seem concerned about putting the cart before the horse. How specific does this, should it be to get good proposals?
Well, we, you know, it's like Jeff Jones, our staff member who was presenting, said, the council needs to decide what it wants before we do an RFP. Because if we're ambiguous, then we're going to just create frustration for us and the respondents. So I think it's important that we have a pretty good idea of, you know, what we would tolerate and what we'd like, and then and what our limits are. And so we left it that we were going to take the RFP with modest tweaks and convene a work session and invite the public to give us input, especially potential respondents to give us input before we issue it, and to help us brainstorm what it should say and what's within the realm of possibility.
Is there enough space to do a substantial mixed-use development, or should it all be for housing?
The total parcel is about 29 acres, Leslie, of which about 10 of it are either in the riparian quarter of East Canyon Creek or up on the hillside to the north. So 17 acres is, and you could do a lot there if you really wanted to densify it. I don't think it's a great place for a mixed use per se, where there's a lot of retail or commercial. I think it, maybe there's a little of that, but this is just my speaking, not. But I think it should mostly be housing.
Okay, so best guess when that RFP will be issued?
Well, there's many of us on the council that say we want to keep moving expeditiously. I would say in the next 90 days, if you want me to guess.
Okay. Assistant County Manager Jana Young presented an efficiency and performance initiatives within the county that she had copied from communities in Colorado, basically to save taxpayer money and within the county's bureaucracy. So based on her presentation, has it worked?
Well, she gave some examples of how it has. I think it's a very helpful exercise to see if the structures and the protocols and policies we have are leading to an efficient delivery of services, and if there are ways to streamline it. We are accused of being a difficult place to do business in this land use area, that we have a lot of red tape, or just it's a slow deliberate process, and maybe there's, hopefully we can still accomplish the protections without making it so difficult, and having it'll streamline and be more cost effective and efficient if we can do some of those things. So I think I'm in favor of what she's been doing.
All right. So as we know, though, the budget is still increasing. So does this exercise indicate to you that those increases are justified?
That's a really broad question. The reasons for budget increases are manifold, and hopefully efficiencies would tamper the rate of increase. But I don't think that this is going to result in no increases.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention, Chris? I know that we didn't get to the historic building discussion, but anything else you want to tell us?
No, I think you've covered the most urgent things very well. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate your time, too. That's Summit County Council Member Chris Robinson. And this just came in from Basin Rec. There is a herd of elk in Willow Creek, so please keep your dogs leashed if you're out there walking. In the studio now with a preview of the upcoming gallery stroll and more, I have the Executive Director of the Park City Summit County Arts Council, Jocelyn Scudder, along with Community Inclusion Coordinator, Andrea Zavala. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Sure. Jocelyn, let's start with the gallery stroll this Friday, October 25th.
This Friday, October 25th, 6 to 9 p.m., it's our October gallery stroll. So this is put on by the Park City Gallery Association. There are 13 galleries represented in the association. Mostly you can identify them. A lot of them have big white flags in front of their galleries during gallery stroll. So that's the indicator to go inside, check out whatever new exhibit they might have, meet the gallerist, and see what collections they have. And also, you know, for locals, this is the time to go to Main Street. There's also the Dinabout. The HPCA, Historic Park City Alliance, is putting on with a ton of restaurants, really great dinner specials. So this is the time. I feel like all of us locals really look forward to October because it quiets down a little bit. We can go into these amazing restaurants and really savor not only these deals like Dinabout, but make a night of it and go to Gallery Stroll as well.
And free parking in China Bridge.
Exactly.
Are you aware of anything special happening? Sometimes they've done flowers, they've done live music.
Yeah, so October, there isn't a special theme. Those do happen every so often. So October, I think that's why I wanted to mention the Dinabout, because me personally, I think that's what I'm going to take advantage of. Definitely head to Main Street. And there are also some great galleries in Prospector. There's Crepe PC, our local artist collective that the Arts Council operates. And we'll have open studios. We have studios on the second floor. So that's something special to come check out. You can come meet some of our local artists who create in those studios and check out local art. And then we also have JG Art at the Prospect. And then out, if you live on the east side, William Cranstover has his gallery out in Peoria if you want to go check him out.
Okay, Andrea, as the Community Inclusion Coordinator for the Arts Council, maybe talk a little bit about what you do.
I do, yeah. So I'm in charge mainly of the Latino Arts Festival during the summer. Mm-hmm. And then once that winds down, we focus on Dia de los Muertos. We brought it back this year. We did it 2 years ago, I think, and it was a success. So we wanted to bring it again now that we have Create PC and everything. I'm also in charge of talking to the community, having connections, telling them about what the events that we're doing and making sure they know about them. Just, you know.
Yeah.
Networking.
Well, tell us about the Dia de los Muertos celebration. This happens the day after Halloween.
The day after Halloween. And just to be clear, it has nothing to do with Halloween. We actually celebrate the life of the people that have passed to, you know, the other side. So for Dia de los Muertos, it's mainly a Mexican tradition, the way that you're used to see it. A lot of Latin American countries celebrate it, but you also have countries that don't do anything for that day. And so for the Dia de los Muertos, we're going to have a special community ofrenda where the community can bring objects or food or anything that this special person liked during, you know, when they were in this earth. We're also going to have free tamales, free face painting. We're going to be making flowers with Ali Arocho Martinez. Ramon Ramos is the one putting up the ofrenda. And we also have the Aztec dancers doing a ceremony for the opening for the Dia de los Muertos. So everybody's welcome.
Yeah, so what time and where is it going to be?
It'll be on November 1st from 5 to 8 p.m. at Create PC, which is at 1500 Kearns Boulevard, Park City, just right next to Tupelo behind Wells Fargo.
All right. I mean, kind of the image that we see of this is always skulls, you know, beautifully painted skulls. Is it a celebration? I mean, is it a happy occasion, or are we mourning the dead?
We're mourning the death, and it will be nice if everybody can come that day, because it will be also an explanation from Artes de Mexico. Fanny will be there telling us and educating us a little bit more about it, because there is a lot of skull, but there is a history behind that. There is a special person that created this image of La Catrina that you're used to see. But it's nothing to do with death. We celebrate the life of the people that have passed, and everything is just a sentimental date for everybody in Latin America.
All right. Again, that's November 1st at Create PC from 5 to 8 p.m. Jocelyn, you also wanted to let us know about a small business Saturday holiday market. What's this?
Yeah, so this is a new opportunity. And as an arts council, you know, we always want to be presenting cool opportunities for our local artists and our local makers that will help them thrive, as that's part of our mission. And so Junction Commons, or formerly known as the Park City Outlets, they've rebranded to be Junction Commons. And they want to do a small business Saturday market. And so this is planned for November 30th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Junction Commons. It is an outdoor kind of winter style market. So it's something new that they're trying. They're aiming to get 40 artists and makers to apply. It is $75 for the day. And you have, if you're interested in this opportunity, again, I think their idea is it's a small business Saturday. It's right after Thanksgiving. There are going to be a lot of people at Junction Commons or the outlets shopping and getting ready for the holidays. And so it could be a really cool time to get in front of new clients and customers. And so the deadline to apply for this opportunity is November 1st. So that's coming up. And so if you actually had, they have a website. If you Google Junction Commons Park City, or they have an Instagram, Junction Commons PC, you can find out about this opportunity. So it's brand new. This is their first year that they're going to try this out. And people, you know, artists, it is more of like this outdoor style market where people would have to bring their own 10 by 10 tent and set up a booth. People who've done, outdoor markets understand what that takes. And they're going to be providing some outdoor heaters. And then in the case of inclement weather, because, you know, that's obviously at that time of year, you never know. They do have some dark storefronts that they've talked about bringing a couple of artisan makers in, maybe spreading it out through the complex. So they do have a plan B for inclement weather. But it's a cool new opportunity. And so if you are a local artist or maker, if you make, this is not only fine art, but if you make jams or leather goods or, you know, anything that qualifies as a handmade item, you should check out this opportunity. I think it's going to be an interesting opportunity and a cool way to see how Junction Commons is doing something new for the local artist community. Obviously, it's something that we're a fan of.
Sure. Any idea where those booths are going to be set up? I mean, in the parking lot, but...
It will be in the parking lot in the lower lot. So if you're familiar with the layout of Junction Commons, there are two kind of main sections. And there's an area where there's a little bit of a playground. Sometimes they have food trucks. And I believe that's where they're aiming it. Don't misquote me, because we are not really the producer of this. We are here to help promote and connect with our local artist community to make sure they're apprised of the new opportunity.
All right. But I'm guessing, I mean, it's staged away from the parking.
Yes.
From the driving. They're certainly going to be parking in the area.
Exactly.
Okay. Anything else you want to let people know?
I guess I just wanted to reiterate, the Dia de los Muertos, you know, this is something that we piloted in 2022. We couldn't host it last year because we didn't have a venue. And this year we have our Create PC, so we, Local Arts Collective, so we wanted to bring it back. It is a really important partnership that we hold with Artes de Mexico in Utah. They've done, they've really helped lead this and help identify the histories and why this is important, allowing us to understand how deeply rooted it is in Mexican tradition, but other Latin American traditions as well. We're going to have free food. We've hired someone to make tamales. We have pan de muerto, which is a really kind of culturally known type of sweet bread that will be there during the day. We'll have face painting. And so even if you're not a person who identifies as Latino, this might be a really cool opportunity for people to come and learn about it and connect with new people that they might not know. The community ofrenda is a really interesting way to learn about how this, you know, culturally, Dia de los Muertos does honor loved ones that have passed, but in a really beautiful way. And people, you know, in past, they have brought photographs and poems and flowers to add to this ofrenda. So it's this really living and breathing art installation that's really beautiful. And then Andrea did mention we have this Aztec group from Heber coming up, and, you know, honoring those indigenous histories. This is really a really long, long tradition, kind of before it became commercialized and everyone sees these skulls. And I think that's where Artists in Mexico and Utah is really trying to bring out those histories. So it's a really wonderful learning opportunity for the entire community. And it's free and open to the public, again, 5 to 8 p.m. So we just encourage people to come out and check it out, even if it sounds like something different and something you may not have encountered before.
Okay. That's Park City Summit County Arts Council Executive Director Jocelyn Scudder, along with Community Inclusion Coordinator Andrea Zavala. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And again, we still got some... looks like it's been cleared up there on US 40, so good for that. But we do still have some backup on I-80 eastbound between the Park City exit and the US 40 exit. In the studio now, with an update from Basin Recreation, I have Executive Director Dana Jones. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start off with the budget first. And then your request, you of one of three other special service districts for county council to just... pretty much leave you alone. We've got this figured out. So let's start with the budget itself. I mean, it balanced, ready to go?
You know, we have done a lot of work with our budget this year. We've involved all the managers in, you know, really kind of putting together something that I feel is a really good product this year. We took it to our administrative control board a couple weeks ago at the meeting, and they have passed the tentative budget, and now it goes to county council. Basin Rec, Park City Fire, and Mountain Regional Water were asking for was that county council allow our administrative control boards to approve our final budgets. They declined to give up that responsibility, so we're status quo as far as that goes. We're going to need to go our board, county council preliminary, back to our board, back to county council again, as we have the last couple years.
So it just requires more public hearings and, yeah, more meetings.
More meetings, yeah, more things on the agenda, more public hearings, you know, more staff time, more of county council's time, and less of an opportunity for our own administrative control board to really have that responsibility.
All right. So the budget, I mean, we're talking any new positions, new programs?
You know, we have not asked for any new full-time positions. We've increased our part-time and seasonal budgets a little bit because we have more new programs and more new revenues coming in, and all of those things just require more people, especially in recreation, which is what we do.
All right. And then in terms of the capital budget, what are you looking at?
You know, we have a number of projects that we have budgeted for, and some new equipment that we've budgeted for. We are, you know, hopeful as we grow to just be able to do a lot of our own work and that kind of things. One of the things we budgeted for is a large piece of equipment that'll help us move our own snow and be able to get those kind of things done more efficiently. And then... as always, we have trail projects that are kind of in the works that we're hoping for. We have some a lot of just trying to keep everything that we have running and you know, capital replacement kind of things. So things are wearing out, things are breaking down, and we want to keep everything top notch so that we're not down at any one time.
So what about Silver Creek Village?
You know, we're kind of in a holding pattern on that one right now. We're working with planning with the county, or working with our own administrative control board. We're looking at the development agreement that is in place there and just trying to figure out what we're doing. We did put in a new trail there, and so there's actually a really cool loop trail there now that people can walk on. We anticipate maybe in the next year or two being able to do some smaller projects there, not a big giant need a bond for kind of projects, but projects that we have funding for internally to be able to do. We're looking at property we already have some buildings on now to be able to expand, potentially expanding the parking up by the bike park and things like that.
All right. Speaking of trails, I mean, what are we looking at in terms, what's the latest there?
Well, right now, just to let everybody know, the Bittner Connector Trail is open now. So we're really excited about that. We've been working with the county on that. People may have seen all the work going on as part of the new Runamuck parking lot expansion. And so we've got a bunch of dozers there. They're putting in a whole new parking lot with a permanent restroom. That should be done in about 3 weeks. We're really pushing the contractor on that one because we need that done before the snow flies. But go take a look at that because that's going to be a really cool expansion to the Runamuck area.
Okay. And that increases the parking by how much?
Should about double it from where it is now at Runamuck to adding a whole nother parking lot. And instead of the portable restrooms that have been there for so long, we will now have permanent restrooms. They're not flush toilets, they're vault toilets, but it'll be nice to have some permanent facilities there.
Okay, and we did hear from Basin Rec that there is a herd of elk in Willow Creek, so please keep your dogs leashed until they've moved on. I know you're prepping for winter. We heard that from our trails report. What, just kind of marking trails before we start grooming them?
Yeah, and we have to do things like mow down weeds and things like that, and we won't be able to start grooming, just a reminder, until we have a good 6-inch compacted base before we can start actually grooming trails. But there is a lot of prep work that we have to do, not only out in the field with mowing and getting things ready, but also in the shop to put away summer equipment and start bringing out winter equipment and making sure we're all ready to go for that.
Okay. And then you're also conducting a trail speed study. Tell us about that.
We've over the past couple years, we've done a great job of expanding our ranger our trail ranger program, and we do have a new supervising ranger position, and our new supervising ranger, Aaron, he's got 20 plus years in the public safety realm, and we have we're really trying to answer the public's questions on, we have the new e-bike policies and the new 15 mile an hour speed limit, and one of the big concerns was, how are you going to enforce that? And so we really want to know, are people speeding on the trails? So we've have a couple of kind of a test projects and have the little speed signs so that you can see as you go by them how fast you're going. But it also gives us the data and records the data. And what we have found, interestingly enough, is the vast majority of people that are on these trails and going past these speed signs and the data that we're getting are within the speed limit, are within the 15-mile speed limit. Very, very few are go outside of that. And even when we put the sign on a slightly downhill slope, there's still people just are within that speed limit. But this also gives us the opportunity to see what areas we need to concentrate on, and do we need to put more rangers in a certain area because we're starting to have a problem, or, this area is good, we can focus over here. We have put the speed signs around the Willow Creek trails and on the Millennium Trail so far. And we're this is kind of a pilot program, but it seems to be very successful, and so we're probably going to be purchasing a couple of these signs for our selves.
Okay, so is it that people know where these speed guns are, though, and just slowing down prior to them?
I think.
It's like the cop car out there, right? You see it, you slow down, right?
That's, this might actually have an opposite effect, because sometimes people want to see how fast they can go and see how high they can get that number. and we're just not seeing that. And I know when the rangers go out there and are putting the signs up, they get tons of positive comments from the public that are riding by, and they want to see, I want to see how fast I'm going. And so because it's not like a speed gun where if you're going too fast, you're going to get a ticket. It's more of a data collection kind of thing. I don't think that we're getting people slowing down when they hit the signs. I think if anything, they might be speeding up.
All right. So I'm guessing, though, it's for the pedestrian that feels like people are going too fast. So it sounds to me that we've got an issue of just closeness then. I mean, they're whizzing by just too close, even though it's under 15 miles an hour.
That's probably part of it. And, it's a perception thing. It's an education thing. And so, and it's just, maybe what we need to be doing. And, you know, we're always doing education. The Rangers are talk to hundreds of people, you know, every week, just to let people know the perception is that you're going too fast. So when you're going by somebody, you know, give them plenty of room. You might slow down a little bit and just, you know, basically be kind out there on the trails.
Yeah, ring your bell. I like to know when somebody's coming up behind me, and so many people don't.
That is true. I like to know, ring the bell. I like to know on your left or on your right, so you know which side to move to, so you're not jumping out in front of somebody also.
Okay, anything else you want to mention?
You know, this Saturday, just to let people know, our Celebrate the Spirits at Willow Creek. Come on out, community. If you haven't already registered, you don't need to register in advance. You can go ahead and register on site. 11 to 1 o'clock, it's one of my favorite events. Come out in costume and, you know, collect candy and say hi to your neighbors all dressed up. And the weather is supposed to be beautiful for it.
Okay. Dana Jones is the Executive Director of the Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District. Thanks for your time. Wyda's Wasatch County Infrastructure District is authorizing almost $400 million in bonds to build Deer Valley East Village faster. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports.
The Military Installations Development Authority is pouring hundreds of millions of dollars into its projects in Wasatch County. It unanimously passed a $390 million bond resolution Tuesday. That's on top of $260 million in bonds already authorized in 2021. However, residents are still invited to share their thoughts at a hearing next month. MIDA Executive Director Paul Morris said at Tuesday's meeting the goal of the new bonds is to finish construction faster.
You got this beautiful hotel, and we're going to have military people and the public coming down. But if it's one continual construction zone for the next decade, that could be challenging. And one of the best things you can do is accelerate it.
MIDA is the state agency responsible for major development projects in the works, like the Sky Ridge Luxury Golf Facilities near the Jordanelle Reservoir, the Deer Valley East Village expansion, and the Sundance Inn. It's governed by appointed, not elected officials, and was originally formed to serve veterans and military members. The additional $400 million is for MIDA's Mountain Village Public Infrastructure District, which includes the land west of US 40, where Deer Valley is expanding and hundreds of new hotel rooms and residences are under construction. A public infrastructure district, or PID, is a relatively new way to use bonds to pay for infrastructure. The bonds are repaid by levying taxes or special assessment fees in the project area to cover the cost. Morris claims the plan will benefit everyone involved in the MIDA agreement, including Wasatch County and the Wasatch County School District, because the new resort base will become profitable sooner.
The quicker things get built, the more cash directly to the county for municipal services, and the school district is the same way.
The original agreement stipulates MIDA keeps 75% of new property taxes in the development area for the first 40 years of the project, and Wasatch County gets the other 25%. Morris says no state or county revenue will be pledged to the bonds. They would be funded by property tax revenue in MIDA's Wasatch County developments and an additional resort sales tax within the MIDA area, a new taxing power granted to MIDA in the 2024 legislative session. Locals can share feedback on the already approved bonds at a public hearing November 19th at 10 a.m. For a link to register for the meeting, visit kpcw.org. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Well, plans to redevelop the site of the Doubletree Hotel in Park City, also known as the Yarrow, may be no more following the Park City Planning Commission meeting last night. A majority of the planning commissioners said that they're not in favor of allowing height exceptions for the project located at the intersection of Park Avenue and Kearns Boulevard. The property owner is seeking to demolish the decades-old hotel to make way for a modern mixed-use development with 45-foot-tall buildings that would include a condominium hotel, affordable housing, retail, and office space. The proposal exceeds the 35-foot height limit established by city zoning. The attorney for the property owner, Singerman Real Estate, said the commission's opposition to the proposed height likely means the project's dead. The attorney said they have evaluated several concepts, including a 35-foot maximum, but it's not feasible financially. Commissioners opposed to the height exception still lauded the project's benefits, including a new pedestrian path along Kearns Boulevard. Following the discussion last night, the commission delayed a future meeting on the project to a date uncertain. And a new town won't be coming to Wasatch County's Northfields anytime soon. A group of property owners in the Northfields applied to become a town at the beginning of September. Mark Wilson, the primary sponsor of the application, has said that the group wanted to form a town in part to have a say in the Heber Valley bypass route and to protect the valley's water supply. But on Monday, the county clerk determined the group did not meet the requirements to move forward with the incorporation process.